So Amanda had told me over lunch that one thing she would not do is to make the speaker blush, which is exactly what she ended up doing. So, well, let's see. I'll tell you about things I've been worrying about for actually the past 20 years. The puzzle raised by Stephen Hawking, that's the thing that Hawking became famous for. Everybody knows Hawking is famous, but not everybody knows what he's famous for. He's famous for introducing the black hole information paradox. It doesn't have much to do with this picture, which I just stole from the NASA website, because it looks nice. And I'll begin by thanking my students and postdocs who've worked with me on the part of work here, which would be I would be involved in. But lots of other groups have contributed to the development of this, what we call the fuzzball paradigm. In fact, there was a nice work done here with the students and postdocs and Amanda Pete, who's here. Okay, so let's begin with something really very simple. Something that you all know, gravity is an attractive force. So of course you know that. If you fell off your chair, you would know it. So this fact actually, simple fact, will actually have very profound consequences for our understanding of how physics should go. But let's begin with something a little silly. Just take ordinary Newtonian mechanics with point particles. So here are two point particles. The particles are in a box. If I bring the particles very close to each other, you know, because the force is attractive, you have a negative gravitational potential. So if you bring them really close, you can release an arbitrary amount of positive energy, which you can put into other particles which are racing around. So if you want to see how much phase space you find here, it looks to be infinite. But of course, this is a little silly. You could say you could do the same thing with electric charges. You could take an electron and a positron, and you could bring them close, same thing would happen. But of course, you know, that's a little silly, because once you take into account relativity, quantum mechanics, and everything, you know, there's no instability like that. Okay? But gravity is not quite the same as electromagnetism. In fact, we can see where the differences are, and one of them which will be really important to us is electromagnetism, like charges, repel. So if you had a big collection of charges, some positive and some negative, the repulsion energy, the positive potential of these guys, is actually outweighed by the negative attraction between these, and you might know if you have some continuous distribution, the net energy is always positive. Now, gravity has only one kind of charge, and they all attract. So we've got to see there are already some differences. But in fact, the differences keep continuing, because as we know, this is actually a linear theory, because the mediation of the electromagnetic force is done by a spin one particle, the photon. There's a whole theory of it called renormalizable gauge theory. We pretty much understand the physics of electromagnetism. Here, things get a little bit messy. Because the theory is nonlinear, we'll see that's why you end up making black holes. The mediating particle this time is spin 2, and the spin 2 particles, all hell breaks loose. Normal physics of the kind we had learned doesn't work. In fact, the whole thing seems to have gone and stabilized into something much more complex called string theory, where particles have been replaced by strings. So in fact, gravity is different, and let's see what that's going to give us in terms of issues. Well, this will be our issue. So for gravity, if you add relativity and quantum mechanics to that simple model I started with, it'll actually lead you to big problems, because you will find a powerful contradiction. In the following steps, first, if we have general relativity, it will lead to the formation of black holes. If you have black holes and you do quantum mechanics around the black hole, you will find that quantum mechanics becomes inconsistent. This was the work of Stephen Hawking. You start with a wave function describing some state. It'll evolve to something which is not even a wave function. So standard quantum theory is incompatible with general relativity. Hawking pointed this out in 1974. That's quite a while ago, and there have been obviously enormous amounts of struggle with that, because we love both these theories, GR and quantum mechanics, and if you cannot put them together, then you of course have a serious problem. Your whole foundation of physics is going to fall down. We now think we understand what the solution of this paradox is, and resolving this will teach us something remarkable about the phase space of quantum gravity. So it will be very, very simple and basic physics, but obviously it has to be something which we did not really expect before, because all these years we were sort of stuck with this question. So let's see what string theory might teach us, but before that, let's just start with a small introduction to what black holes are. So let's begin with what is gravity. So if I have some big mass m and a test mass little m placed at a distance r, let's see the motion of this test mass. I'll do F equal to ma, and the force of gravity will go like this. And of course, the beautiful thing about gravity is that the m cancels out, and the acceleration of this guy doesn't depend on what mass it had. So all bodies will actually follow the same trajectory. And you can see that's very useful if different bodies of different masses follow different trajectories. Think of us going around the sun right now. Some of you would be smashed against that wall. Some of you would go and smash into that wall. We all go together and don't even notice the fact we're going around, because all bodies follow the same trajectory. And then Einstein took that very seriously and said, why don't we build it into the foundations of our theory? It's not a force at all, gravity. We can build it into the structure of space-time. So in whatever tracks these guys follow, let's think of those tracks as basic and not the particles, and let's see what happens. So then you might say, how can gravity not be a force? Every time I fall down, I certainly feel it. Well, if you had no force, and you draw X and T diagram, you know the motions are straight lines. And so, for example, two particles in empty space will meet only once and then not meet again. But if you actually curve your space-time diagram here, your space-time as a sheet, if that was a curved surface, and then you try to draw what are called straight lines or the shortest paths on this curved surface, of course, you know they can intersect more than once. You can get all kinds of lines you like. For example, on the surface of the Earth, the different longitudes are the shortest lines. They are geodesics, but they meet at the North Pole and they meet again at the South Pole. So you can, all you have to do is to curve space-time. Well, then the only other thing you need to know, this is how particles move. The only other thing you'd like to know is what curves space-time. And that's also obvious. If there's no mass around, space-time is flat, particles go in straight lines. I just drew the light cones here for later use. But then if you have a mass m, it curves space around. Even the light cones tip a little bit inwards, you find the shortest path, and then things go around, and that's the Earth, let's say, going around the Sun. So that's a complete story. And now we have built the fact that the m canceled out into a nice way of saying that the space-time curves, and then just follow the straightest path. And if you follow the straightest path, it really means there is no force. Just take a no-force situation on curved space-time. Well, this gives you very interesting things which you can do with this. One curiosity you get is something called an ergo region. This will actually be of importance to us later on in the talk, so even though it's otherwise a curiosity, let me mention it. Suppose you have a rapidly spinning star here. There's a star spinning rapidly. Far away from it, of course, the light cones are normal. Far away, the space-time is just flat. But as you come close, in general relativity, what you find is that it drags the space around. The light cones tilt in the direction of motion. And since all particle trajectories must stay inside the light cone, you can't go faster than the speed of light, any particle is forced to rotate around. So if a particle tries to stay at one place, he will have to travel faster than the speed of light. So if you go very close to a star which is rotating sufficiently fast, you must co-rotate with the star. Okay. But in fact, you can do something even simpler with the structure you now have. Suppose you just put a lot of mass, no rotation, right here near the center. Then in fact, the light cones far away, of course, are again what they should be. They don't change much. But as you come closer, the light cones tip a little bit inwards. And what happens is they tip so much that all the lines inside the light cone lead only inwards. Well, this is the object that we call a black hole. Because now, of course, you can see nobody can ever get out. And once you're in here, in fact, you have to keep going further and further towards the center. Anything which crosses this area, which is called the horizon, and goes in, unless he wants to travel faster than the speed of light, which nobody can do, he just has to keep going in. So it's not a question of trying to work hard enough or put a sufficiently big rocket to escape. Anytime you follow a line which is inside the light cone, travel slower than the speed of light, you will keep going in, and you'll end up at the center. So this is the object that you would think. It's a black hole. And if you just play with general relativity, you can't avoid making this. You just put enough mass in there, the light cones tip, tip, tip. At some point, they tip enough that you get the black hole. So it's almost impossible to make a theory of relativity where you don't make a black hole. Okay. So do these things actually exist in the sky? Well, there are enough observations now that people are sure, or almost sure, that what they're seeing there is a black hole. So all this is real. Let's just get the hang of a little bit of scales of black holes. Everything you want to know about classical black holes is in this one slide. So let's just go through a few numbers. Here was our mass m and our mass little m. If I take this mass little m at a distance r, what energy does it have? So in the Newtonian approximation, it would have just a mix things to get orders of magnitude. Special relativity would tell me it has an energy mc square, and the gravitational potential in this approximation is minus gmm over r. And then you notice because the signs are opposite, the energy of this guy actually becomes negative if you're at a distance shorter than this value. If you do the whole thing in proper general relativity, all you have missed is a factor of 2, and this in fact turns out to be the size of the horizon. If you come closer than that, your energy actually becomes negative, again, something we shall use when discussing Hawking's work. So if you come sufficiently close to the black hole to fall inside the horizon, your mc square energy, rest energy, is less than your gravitational potential energy, so your net energy is negative. Okay, but you can see the estimate was so simple. If you put the mass of one sun there, solar mass in there, you find its radius is 3 kilometers. The black hole centers of galaxies can be like 10 to the 8 solar masses. You can see this is linear in the mass, so in fact, this radius will be like 10 to the 8 kilometers. You can have fun trying to find out how much you should be squeezed to fall into a black hole. Just put your mass in here, and you will get a size. Okay? It's very simple. It's completely linear. So it's just a back-of-the-envelope calculation, and you know everything about orders of magnitude of black holes. That's all here. And is this stuff really there in the sky? So this is some picture which you get from these groups who do observations. You can see that nothing really there. These are stars, but there's no mass coming out of there. And yet these heavy stars are able to go and bend around sharply against a point where there's no light coming out. So that's the object which people think is the black hole center of our galaxy, and it's supposed to be about 10 to the 6 solar masses. So you can look at these trajectories and figure out what mass that guy might have had. So this stuff is real, and all this looks like fun. In fact, now we want to go deeper, not into the astronomy of these black holes, but into the conceptual questions which black holes pose. And the first time people came across these interesting issues was under the title of something called black hole thermodynamics. So this thing began with the work of Bekenstein in 1972, and he posed the following question: do black holes have entropy? Now, why would you think that? Well, if you take a box with some gas and you toss it into the black hole, the gas would go in and disappear. So then you have lowered the entropy of the universe, and you have violated the second law of thermodynamics. Now, people hate to violate the second law of thermodynamics because people have said all other laws in physics might fall, but this is one law which would never fall. In fact, nobody's ever found this law to fall. But then, of course, the statement is a little silly on the face of it, because, of course, if I throw some gas into a garbage can and I close the can, it doesn't mean the entropy has gone down. The entropy of the garbage can has gone up. The only difference here, of course, is you can't see what's going on in the black hole. But in any case, the black hole becomes bigger. So, in fact, if you could just keep careful track of that and do your Gedanken experiments, your thought experiments, you find if you associate to the black hole this much entropy, where A is the area of this surface, the horizon surface, then Newton's constant comes in, C and H bar come in. Most of the time we put units where C and H bar are unity, so then it just looks like area upon 4 times the Newton's constant. If you put this much entropy and associate that to the black hole, then you find whatever entropy you might have lost in the matter which fell in is gained by the black hole because the black hole become bigger, and you save the second law of thermodynamics. Okay, so that's nice. You've got actual number just by doing Gedanken experiments for the entropy of a black hole. Well, you can now do a simple calculation. If this is the entropy, and we said the area is just 4 pi r squared, just put that in, r over the radius of the horizon, we already had that, it was 2gm, everything you learned on the previous slides, you get a certain number for the entropy. Does the black hole have energy? Yes, it's the mass. We have put C equal to 1, E is mc squared, I'll just be calling it m. And then you go back and look at your thermodynamics textbook, and you find there must be a temperature given through TdS equals dE if there has to be any thermodynamics at all for the black hole. You have an S and you have an E, so why don't we compute that? E was M, so you compute this and you find that the black hole should have a certain temperature. It's just a one-line calculation. But then if you still keep looking at your thermodynamics book, you would find something called a principle of detailed balance, which tells you if a body has a non-zero temperature, and if it can absorb something, it also has to radiate. There's no choice. If it can absorb something and you have a temperature, you will radiate at a very specific rate. But now you seem to have a problem, because black holes certainly absorb, everything goes in. We saw the light cones were tilted inwards, everything goes in and in. But we just said nothing can come out, out, out. So even though we went this far with the idea of entropy and the temperature and so on, at this point, there seems to be a problem. Well, let's see what the fix of this one is. And the fix is quite simple. We have relativity in our game already, but we know the real world also has quantum mechanics. When you put them together, you get quantum field theory. And in quantum field theory, we are told that what we think of as the vacuum in this room is not really very empty. There are quantum fluctuations in the vacuum where particles keep popping out of the vacuum and going back into the vacuum. And with all this thing happening around us, bubbling around, whatever is going on, well, that is what we call the vacuum. It is that state with all this bubbling going on which has what we call energy equal to zero. But if these particles keep coming and going, you might think they are not very useful, but in fact, you can do useful things with them, because suppose you put a battery and put a positively charged plate here and a negatively charged plate over there, then when these particles pop out of the vacuum, before they can re-annihilate, the positively charged particles, suppose this was an electron, suppose this was a positron, this guy can rush one side, this guy can rush the other side, and you can actually collect real particles on these plates and a current would flow. So you can just put two plates in the vacuum, and then if you just put a strong enough battery here, there will actually be a small residual current even though there is no conductor between the plates. All that is happening is the vacuum fluctuations come out, but before they can go back, you sort of tore them apart, and then you collected them. Not very easy to see practically, but conceptually, of course, you're going to get this. Well, does the same thing happen for a black hole? Well, in a black hole, of course, you can't attract the one kind of charge one way, one kind of charge the other way, because gravity attracts everything. But certainly, if you're near a black hole, the stronger attraction closer to the black hole and weaker a little bit further away, that's what we call a tidal force. If it pulls you more on one side, less on the other, there's a relative stretching. So if you produce a pair of particles near the horizon, what can happen is the guy outside might drift outwards, while the guy inside gets caught and falls in. And so this is the process where you will find that just because the vacuum has this continuous bubbling going on, you find that near a black hole, there must be a slow rate of production of particles coming out and just piling up out here. So something as simple as that, and you realize that black holes, classically nothing could come out, but quantum mechanically a black hole would radiate. That's the work that Hawking did, and he showed, he called this thing, well, people called this Hawking radiation. And in fact, the temperature of that comes out to be exactly what you would like from the thermodynamics. So now, in fact, all the scales that you need to know for the quantum theory of black holes are, again, in this one slide, so you can do a back of the envelope calculation. The black hole has only one length scale in it, which we already had, the radius of the black hole, which you know how to calculate. What's the wavelength of the quanta you produce? There's only one scale in the problem. It's the radius of the black hole. So a solar mass black hole produces 3 kilometer wavelength quanta. After you produce one quanta, how long till the next one comes out? There's only one length scale in the problem, the radius divided by the speed of light, because you know how rapidly they will come. How long will it take the whole black hole to disappear? If the energy is showing up here, the black hole must be shrinking away. Well, you can take the total mass of the black hole. You know how much energy in each quantum. You know how much interval between quanta. If you find the evaporation time, it's very simple. For a solar mass black hole, it takes 10 to the power 63 years. Okay? Now, some of you might know the age of the universe is only 10 to the power 11 years. So this is not a very practical thing, but the conceptual issues to do with Hawking, with this what's called Hawking evaporation are extremely serious, and that's what we want to do. So it's not like you want to go and see in the sky a solar mass black hole evaporating. If a black hole had a mass only 10 to the 16 grams, not 10 to the 33 like the sun, it would have evaporated by now in 10 to the 11 years. Okay. So, but anyway, it's a conceptual issue. So we have the slow radiation coming out, and we have found a beautiful black hole thermodynamics. Black holes have entropy, black holes have temperature, black holes have energy, satisfies TdS equals dE. What could be nicer? Okay. So as I said, this looks like fun. But actually, we've gotten ourselves into a lot of trouble, which right now we don't see. And you know, we are going to be completely swallowed by this, you know, big bunch of trouble. So what trouble have we gotten ourselves into? So this comes to the issue of the paradox. So first, with entropy itself, there is a puzzle. We said the black hole has this much entropy. As Statbeck, if you keep looking at the thermodynamics book a little further, would tell you the entropy of any system is the number of states of the system for a given energy. And then you take the log of that. So entropy is log of the number of states. So if you have found the entropy of the black hole by some Gedanken experiments of what should go in, what should come out to say the second law, the black hole should have e to the s states. If you put the mass of the sun in there and you compute this, you find it should have 10 to the power 10 to the power 77 states. And then people said, well, where are these states? If you go to a black hole, what the states mean, if you look at a normal box of gas, it has some entropy. There are lots of different configurations of the atoms, almost the same macroscopically, but completely different orthogonal states microscopically, and their count is what you want to call the entropy. Well, so people went about looking for small distortions of the black hole, like the air here looks homogeneous, but when you see where the atoms are, it looks a little inhomogeneous. So they thought, okay, one black hole like this, and one black hole like this, one like this, they all look like the black hole. If you could count these configurations, okay, that might give us the entropy of the black hole. It anyway comes from the surface area, so they thought we should look at distortions of this boundary of the black hole. And then what happens is you find there are no allowed distortions. So this is what ends up happening. If you put any distortion on this black hole, like you perturb the metric around it or some other field, part of the energy just flows out, part of the energy just falls into the black hole, and the guy stabilizes very fast and becomes back into whatever you had before. The black hole geometry seems to be completely fixed by its conserved quantum numbers, mass, charge, angular momentum. Well, if you have only one geometry for the black hole, the entropy would have to be log of 1, which is 0, and 0, as you can see, is not the same as this. So you have a serious problem. John Wheeler, in fact, gave this thing a name. He said black holes have no hair. They're completely bald. Okay, they look completely uniform. And it's a serious problem because, again, you can ask, where are the states of the black hole? So what's the conceptual question we have come to? We have found that black holes must have entropy, otherwise second law is violated. We got a good formula for the entropy. But unless we can find the states for that entropy, the normal idea of Statmec, that entropy is coming from the count of states, that wouldn't work out. So that was all the hard work of Boltzmann, you know, for which people drove him almost crazy. But at least we believe it now, that entropy is the count of the number of states, and people couldn't find the states. Okay, you might think that's our mistake. We couldn't find it. Maybe there's some small distortion in the middle, and you know, if all the states were like sitting here, not here, maybe you wouldn't see them because it's very dense in the center. So it's not a problem. It's just funny. But in fact, there is a problem, and the problem is this. This is the problem that Hawking found. Let's go back to our idea of Hawking radiation. We saw the vacuum keeps getting torn apart, and you can find this rate of Hawking radiation. But as we said, every time you create a Hawking particle, the black hole must lose some energy and actually become smaller. Remember, the radius of the black hole is proportional to the mass. If energy has showed up there by energy conservation, the black hole becomes smaller. And that also has to happen because the particle which went in, remember, its energy was negative. The mc square was less than the gravitational potential. So these guys which went in had negative energy. So they decreased the mass of the black hole. And so particles keep coming and forming, and they keep going out. The black hole gets smaller. Black hole finally go away, and you'll get all this radiation. So that's fine. At least energy is conserved. You got all these particles, and you should be happy. If you lost the black hole, all the mass has shown up in these particles. Well, the problem comes from the nature of this evaporation process. So if you take two different bunches of objects which both have the same total mass, suppose you made a black hole by taking lots of apples and letting them shrink under their gravity till they made a black hole, or you could take a lot of oranges and you let them shrink under their gravity, there had to be a lot of oranges, okay, and they shrink in and it makes a black hole. And see what happens. They both become black holes, and then around the horizon, this process starts. There's just a vacuum here, and this process starts and the particles start getting produced. But the important thing is, in the place here is just the vacuum. Because you saw everything fell into the black hole because the light cones were inwards, nothing can hang out around the vacuum, around the horizon. We just saw when people tried to put perturbations around the horizon, they just left. There was nothing could be, was sticking around the horizon. So in fact, this region here is identical to this region here. They are both smooth, empty spaces. So whatever's happening here has no information about the fact that apples went in here and oranges went in here. And so after time, when you only have the radiation left, you have the serious problem. The final state here and the final state here, they don't know how to distinguish themselves from each other because these particles were pulled out of the vacuum, and in the vacuum was no information about what made the black hole. So even though the energy was conserved from the black hole to these final particles, the information was not. The energy all went into the mass in the center. It came out from tearing the vacuum apart, but because the vacuum knows nothing, it's a unique state, it had no information. In fact, we can make this now into a precise problem, which is what Hawking pointed out. In quantum mechanics, the final state in any evolution always has full information about the initial state. If you have some initial state psi I, you'll put Schrodinger evolution e to the minus I h t and find the final state. You can turn it around. Psi initial is given by taking psi final and applying this operator. It's a 1-1 onto map between initial states and final states. So if you had two different initial states which managed to go to the same final state, it doesn't matter that I don't know what the Hamiltonian is. No Hamiltonian could ever do this job for me. And that's why Hawking said that we have a complete breakdown of quantum mechanics. So the picture is very simple. You have this very big black hole. It's completely smooth near the horizon. How do you prevent the vacuum from tearing itself apart? You can just calculate that. It tears itself apart. You're producing the particles around the place where the horizon is. There is no information of what made the black hole, and you are stuck. Let's be a little bit more technical about what the problem is. The problem is like this. Suppose you produce this pair of particles. They are produced in what is called an entangled state. So if you remember your quantum mechanics 101, you can have them in a spin up times spin down plus spin down times spin up. Suppose they're in a spin zero total state. So this is what is called an entangled state. The state of this times this plus this times this. Nothing wrong with such states. You can make these so-called EPR pairs in the lab. Probably you do this if you're an experimentalist. And this whole thing is therefore described by some nice state. It's just an entangled state between the outside particle and the inside particle. But now the magic which is happening is the inside particle which fell into the black hole, it has disappeared. As long as it stayed inside the black hole like some garbage can, it was not a problem. I can be entangled with something which is in the other room. I may not see that guy, but it's fine. But if that thing disappears completely and it's not in the universe anymore, what state do I ascribe to this particle? I can't say it is this plus this. If you try your quantum mechanics, you will see there's no such natural projection. So in fact, now you can't assign this guy any state at all, and the only way to describe this is by a density matrix row. So states evolve to things which are not states. And in fact, just to put this thing once more clearly, in normal physics, pure states just evolve to other pure states by doing this. We know density matrices can be found in the StatMech book, but that happens if you have a big system. You choose to look at one part, choose to ignore the other part, then you can trace over this, and you get something called a density matrix row. But when a black hole forms and evaporates, you don't have a choice. The pure states, the ordinary quantum state psi, they evolve to these mixed states, which must be described by density matrices because this part is gone. So the problem is I was entangled with somebody, but somebody is no longer in the universe. What is my state? And the point is, me and him together had a state, but if he's gone, I don't have a state. That's the problem. And so quantum mechanics breaks down. So this is Hawking's problem. How do we solve this problem? As long as you have this, and this is what we had for 30 odd years, you're stuck. You can't have quantum mechanics along with GR, general relativity. And Hawking, in fact, said very strongly that we should give up quantum mechanics. We should replace the S matrix of quantum mechanics by a dollar matrix, which in general takes states to density matrices, density matrices, density matrices, all kinds of things. I don't know why he said dollar. Maybe he should have said pounds. But some dollar matrix, which, you know, just evolves everything. States don't go to states. Just forget quantum mechanics. People tried very hard to make sense of that. It doesn't really work. People tried very hard to make things where you don't have states going to states. You see all kinds of things like violation of energy conservation. Okay, nobody could make a theory. And nobody likes it anyway. Everywhere else, quantum mechanics is working. Why should the black hole be different? So let's go and look at what string theory might teach us. String theory, after all, is a full quantum theory of gravity. So you might think, until you had a good quantum theory of gravity, why were we even trying to solve this problem? Well, there was a logical reason, because the black hole was so big. It was 3 kilometers in size. It was a 10 to the 8 kilometers for a galactic black hole. On those big scales, who would care about the theory of quantum gravity? Interestingly, what we are going to find is, even though the scale is 10 to the 8 kilometers, you have to care about the full gravity theory. Normally, you think that quantum gravity should be on small scales and should be hidden from us. But in fact, we'll see it will pop out and bite us. Okay. So what is string theory? Let's just have a brief introduction to string theory for those who don't like it. It looks like a strange theory at first, but you know, what looks like undesirable features actually will come out to be important for solving the black hole puzzles. So the first thing, as you know, is that probably it lives in 10 dimensions. So if you make a black hole in the 4 dimensions we live, 3 space and 1 time, then 6 other dimensions must be made into small compact circles. Of course, that's not a new idea. The old Kaluza-Klein idea, there could be extra dimensions, which are small compact circles. You can read that in the New York Times. So that's, I don't have to apologize for that. Okay. So there are many compact dimensions, but they will be important. Okay. Then we have extended objects. Normally, particles in field theory come and they break up. You know, these things are called Feynman diagrams. Particles break, they rejoin, and so on. But here, in front of particles, you have strings. And these strings come, and you know, they do whatever they do. Why is this important? Because when people try to do this with quantum gravity, trying to quantize the graviton, the spin 2 particle, they found this loop was divergent. As you make the loop smaller and smaller, its contribution actually becomes bigger and bigger. And the reason is also very simple. Gravity depends on energy. Two things are tracked by energy times energy. If you make the loop small, very short wavelength, it's very high energy, the contribution is huge. So you could not do gravity in the ordinary way. But if the particle is replaced by strings, then this whole loop cannot become too small. Because if a donut has so much thickness, you can't buy a donut which is too small. So in fact, you can actually cut everything off and get a nice theory of quantum gravity. And string theory is actually a nice theory because it has actually no free parameters at all. What particles you have in it? You have strings. You have these higher dimensional sheets, which we call brains. Okay, 2-dimensional brains, 3-dimensional brains. All the particles, what brains you have, what masses per unit area they have, what coupling these things have, are all completely fixed. There's not a single parameter you have there free. You can't add a new particle. You can't change somebody's mass. And I must say, people who do phenomenology absolutely hate this. They say, we want something we can tune. Otherwise, how are we going to match data? But there's nothing you can do. String theory is a unique theory, and you can't tamper with anything. But in fact, we'll see it all works out beautifully. So let's try to make black holes in string theory. The first thing we have to notice, since you can't add any new objects to string theory, if there has to be a black hole, you have to make it from the objects which are already in the theory. Okay? So here's my attempt. Here's the compact circle there. I have strings. Why don't I wrap them around this compact circle? It's an elastic band. So if I just wrap it around there, it'll have some mass, some energy. And if I can't resolve the compact direction, because the compact direction might be very small, like in this room, we don't see the compact direction explicitly, it may just look like a little point mass carrying some energy sitting right there at that position. Is that okay? If I just wrap a string in the compact direction, to somebody who can't resolve that direction, looks like a point mass. I'm just trying to make something where I can put a lot of mass in one place and hoping that makes a black hole. I could also take just a graviton. Every theory of gravity has a graviton. If I let the graviton race around in the circle this way, then from the point of view of the non-compact directions, like these directions, it just looks like there's some energy sitting at that place because the guy's just going around. It looks to me like energy just sitting there, not going left or right. So if I try to see what kind of a metric distortion that produces, you know, this is my space-time, it will distort something and make some kind of a distortion. This guy will also make some kind of a distortion. Maybe I can try to make a black hole this way. That's all I can do. First try. So I'm going to take these strings, but not just a few strings because I want to make a big, massive black hole. But if I take lots of different strings, I'll make lots of little tiny black holes. That's not what I am after. I want to make one big black hole, so I should make, this word is very important, a bound state of all these strings. So I take a million strings, and I make a bound state of them. What's a bound state of many strings? Well, string theory is very pictorial, so you can know the answer. You take a string, You wrap it once, twice, thrice, keep wrapping it a million times, and glue it back to itself. That's all. That's a bound state. Okay? That will make a big mass. You try to find the gravitational solution it produces and see if you've made a black hole. What do you want to get from the black hole? If you've made a black hole, it will have a horizon. Horizon should have an area. From the area, I'll get the entropy, and I'll start my worries. But it turns out this time, actually, you don't get any area. And so the area, the entropy which came from the area comes out to be zero. And that's because the strings carry not only a mass, which they did, they also carry charge, because string winding this way is not the same as string winding that way. And by the time you solve the mass and the charge problem altogether, you find, in fact, there is no area. Which this time is actually a very good thing, because if you look at how many states you had, counting states, if you take an elastic band and wrap it on a circle and let it shrink to its minimum energy configuration, there's just one state. So in fact, the count of states, the macroscopic count of states, is log of 1, which is 0, and that agrees exactly with this. 0 equal to 0 may not look very exciting, but at least it is correct. And last time what we had was we got no entropy from the microscopic counting and a huge area out here, so string theory is at least taking care of itself. Second try is not much better. We said we'll have these gravitons racing around the circle. They also make point masses. I should join them up into one graviton with a lot of energy going around to make one bound state. It'll have a lot of energy. Again, it doesn't actually pick up any area. But that's fine. If I just have one bound state of all the gravitons, one very high energy graviton, how many states is that? It's just one state. I count the microscopic entropy. I get log of 1. I get 0. Again, I have 0 equal to 0. I'm still OK, but not very excited. The third try works a little better. We'll take these objects and these objects and let's glue them on. You see how easy string theory is, it's just pictorial. So if you glue these guys onto this, what happens? I'll take a lot of these strings, and if you join all the strings together, make a bound state, it's very simple. You get a string which is wrapped many times around and then just glued back to itself. We call it a multi-wound string for obvious reasons. If you want to stick a lot of momentum onto the string, how do you stick some gravitons traveling this way onto the string? I don't want a string here and gravitons floating here. Those are two different objects. Well, it turns out the gravitons carry momentum in that direction, and if you stick the gravitons onto the string, all that happens is all that momentum gets carried by traveling waves on the string. So if you take a string, I just open it up to the covering space here, it's wrapped many times. If I just open it up, it's just a string, and I put the momentum as traveling waves on the string, and this you must have done. If you have a long string like this, if you give it a shake, a wave goes along it, it carries momentum along it, and now I have put the gravitons and bound them to the string. But those are all the states you have to count. If you take a lot of this and a lot of this, this object I have made has, of course, mass. It has winding charge because of these. It has momentum charge because of these gravitons. It's some massive object. But this time, the degeneracy of microscopic counting is not zero. And why is it not zero? There are many ways to put the same momentum onto the string. You can put all the momentum in the lowest harmonic, or some in the lowest, some in the next, or partition among all the harmonics in any way that you like. But this time, there are a lot of solutions. If you count them, you find how many possible ways of partitioning it do you get. You get something which depends on the number of guys wrapping numbers called N1, number of momentum modes you had there, NP, exponential of this number. Okay, now we are getting to a big number. We suddenly made something. It's just a vibrating string, but you can count. It's a very simple question, just from ordinary physics. If you have a string carrying a certain momentum in one direction, traveling waves, break it among harmonics, quantize the harmonic. Each harmonic has energy h bar omega. And see how many states you get for a given total momentum. This is the count of states. You can give this to an undergraduate. But then this is what happens. What kind of an object have I made? This time, will this guy actually create a horizon? Indeed, in fact, it does, after you take the entire higher derivative corrections of gravity, which come from string theory, into account and so on. This time, you have to be a little bit more careful in how you compute the area entropy. Let me not worry about it, but just say when you compute the entropy from this horizon, which you end up making, you get a certain number. And the count of states had given us an entropy, which was the log of this number of states, and that was this number. And you find they are exactly equal. So now you have really learned something. You actually made an object in string theory. It had a very high degeneracy for those given masses and charges. You counted the degeneracy, took the log, you got a number. You put that in space-time and solved Einstein's equation to see how the space would curve. In solving this, it's very important to assume the spherically symmetric ansatz. Going to be important later on. But people are so scared of Einstein's equations, they always put a spherically symmetric answer before proceeding. So you put a spherically symmetric answer, you solve it, you get an answer, it has a horizon, you measure its area, and you find this area entropy exactly agrees with this. Good, so now we seem to have learned something. You can make more complicated black holes, but you also add other sheets you have in string theory, these brains, and you can make more objects, they also have horizons. Again, the microscopic count of how many states you get when you mix things together agrees with the area which you end up making out here. This looks good. It looks like string theory has finally taught you something. but not the actual problem that you were after. Counting states in string theory has given us this funny area kind of entropy. That's what we have learned. It doesn't help us with the information paradox, because as long as the states are still making something of this structure, anything happening here is going to, you know, pull energy out of the vacuum. You have all the same problems as before. So what we need to know is there anything wrong with the structure of the states? Maybe they don't look like this. That's the only thing that you could hope for. If they look like this, you can actually prove you are in trouble. So when you wrap this thing there, put all the energies and charges there that you wanted, it makes some blob. The blob opens up an area. Do you get this horizon? Actually, we'll see you don't. Why did people think that you get the horizon? Because they put a spherically symmetric ansatz, and now you will see something funny about that. Every time somebody puts an ansatz, you should worry. Okay, here is a string, and I have again opened it up to the cover. It was wrapped many times around. You can see I have opened it up. So this end is identified with this end. And now I had to have traveling waves on it, some momentum on it. So there's the momentum. I've drawn it here. If the string was just sitting like this at a point, from the point of view of the non-compact dimensions, where is all the mass? Right below there at this point. And around that, there's a domain of attraction. That's the horizon. The whole space-time picture looks like this. You come there, and you see the horizon. This horizon is this horizon. Okay, same as everything like before. But in fact, you can't do this. It turns out that the fundamental string, which is what we have used from string theory, doesn't actually have any longitudinal vibration mode. It only has transverse vibrations. So if I try to put any momentum onto the string is going to go left and right and do this. And a different state of the guy is going to go this way, that way, and do this. This was opened up to the covering space, but this piece in the actual space-time gives a piece here, this piece will give a space here. The whole thing goes like a slinky like this all over the place and spreads out over some region. And these guys are not spherically symmetric. You can see there is no way to put momentum on a string while maintaining spherical symmetry. It's something built into string theory. So in fact, there was no spherically symmetric solution. And when you actually work out the metrics produced by these guys, it's interesting that the mathematics you have to use for that is something which came up in a paper of Karen Maldacena and Pete. We use your equations to find the metric produced by a string carrying vibrations. When you work out that metric, you find, firstly, of course, not spherically symmetric. That was already clear. It doesn't have any horizon. It doesn't have any singularity. Every guy makes a different solution there. And you have all these different solutions here. These are the actual states you get when you put these charges together. You never actually get a black hole. So what have we learned here? Let's go back and see why we had no longitudinal mode. This is the guy we didn't happen. You never got a black hole like this. You never got this. This is all that you got. Okay. So how big is this ball? If this whole spread was just a little bit around the center, the rest of the black hole would be the same. But in fact, not. We call this thing a fuzz ball, just for lack of a better word, just lots of quantum fuzzy mess going on. The string has spread out around some region. It has become something like this. But if you take the boundary area of this guy, of how big the fuzz ball is, and divide by g, you find that that gives the same entropy, which gives the count of states. There's a lot of deep physics buried in this slide now. What have we learned here? What we have learned is that if you try to put objects together in the full theory of quantum gravity, namely string theory, if you put everything together into a theory which is consistent in quantum gravity, you cannot actually make a black hole. Why can't you make it? You can't make it because stuff doesn't squeeze inside. So why doesn't it squeeze inside? What's the ultimate reason? And we'll see that the ultimate reason is there are so many states here. The string could go this way, the string could go that way. There's a huge degeneracy. If there's a huge degeneracy, there's a large phase space. Now, you know that you can't fit two different cells of phase space in one place. Each cell of phase space takes a volume h bar cube back to your StatMech book. So if you have an object with a very heavy degeneracy, it just can't be too small. And so when people were writing classical equations with spherical symmetry, they couldn't see the states of the black hole. They put a spherically symmetric ansatz, they got something. None of it is actually realized in the full theory of quantum gravity. Okay. Anyway, we'll come back across these ideas a couple of more times. But right now, we just want to emphasize that instead of actually having black holes which do this, you don't get longitudinal vibrations. You don't get ordinary black holes. You end up getting these things, which we call fuzz balls. And again, as I said, this is very important. Why is there no longitudinal mode of vibration of the string? If there was a longitudinal mode of vibration of the string, all this would be wrong. I could just go do that, longitudinal mode of vibration, put my total mass, my total winding charge, my total momentum charge, make a black hole, it would be a black hole. But the reason is very interesting. If you want to put a longitudinal mode of vibration on a string, the atoms have to come closer, further, closer, further. That's what a longitudinal mode of vibration is. But the fundamental string is not made of anything else. That's why it's fundamental. It's not made up of atoms. There is no way to actually move a string, its pieces closer and further. It has no pieces. Its only distortions are the one which changes actual embedding in space. If you've got a solitonic strings, the same thing happens in many other places. And so by now there's a large body of work trying to make these kind of things, which I was hearing these fuzzballs, with all kinds of brains and charges and different energies and so on. And this stuff has been going on now for the better part of 7 or 8 years. There's some nice construction of it done here at Toronto also with Amanda and her group. In no case does one actually find you get a horizon. Here's an example of something which some people put out recently. I just put out, this is the kind of work that people do. When you say, okay, we'll make that object. So we actually want to show people the structure. And so we actually take a given state in string theory, just compute, do whatever hard work you like. We do work hard somewhere. This is just the pictures. And then you find that, you produce these things. This is the actual structure which I was showing you in those pictures. What about Hawking radiation? Well, now we can go back with the metric I just showed you, which was found by those people I had listed over there. And for this, some special states which we now know for these very complicated black holes, we can actually work out the Hawking radiation explicitly and see how it can actually take the information out. So this is a calculation recently performed over the last couple of years. This is a traditional picture of the black hole. There was a horizon. Pairs form near the horizon. One member goes out, one member goes in. The same thing you have seen before. But actually, you don't have a horizon. What do you have in there? What you find is, if you have one of these black holes which can radiate, it always has something in there called an ergo region. But we already talked about an ergo region. Ergo region is a place where things are spinning so much that the light cones don't let you sit in one place. It could be spinning this way here and that way somewhere else. So the whole thing doesn't have to be rotating. But the inner structure of this whole region, which we thought was inside the black hole, it made of things going this way, things going that way. Of course, I'm oversimplifying because I'm taking a very simple case. It's very quantum and very messy. But ergo regions, it has been known for a long time, in fact, slightly before Hawking's discovery of Hawking radiation, ergo regions also produce particles, but not in a way that loses information. A particle pair is produced because it's extra rotation, and it goes out. It leaves the other member of the pair in there. It doesn't disappear into the singularity in the center. Sometime later, the other member also goes out. So we have computed this with the metric which I had just shown you on the previous slide. We can compute the rate. The rate exactly agrees down to the last 2 pi with what we expected from Hawking radiation. But all the information of this quantum state is imprinted on the radiation. If this guy was turning this way, this guy coming out would have a spin this way. If this guy was turning that way, take a different fuzzball state, the spin of that guy would come out that way. Okay. So now you can actually, we have simple models of actual states of black holes from which you can see where the radiation is coming out of. There's an instability there. Quantum mechanics will solve it, preserves information, just comes in a normal way like any other body. And you can just see the rate agrees with Hawking radiation, but not the details. Radiation does not come out from a horizon. It comes out just like from any other body. But we have changed our picture of the black hole very completely. All this was supposed to be the black hole. All the things you saw in science fiction, there's a horizon, there's nothing there. You just zoom in, you're gone, you're finished. The singularity in the center. But now the inside is something quite different. At least for quantum purposes of these low energy radiation, the inside is completely different. The question we now have to ask is, how can a semi-classical intuition go so wrong? If you ask any astronomer, a black hole is made from an object of mass 10 to the 33 grams. It just collapses. It makes a black hole. What is all this nonsense? A black hole is a black hole, solution of Einstein's equations. It's a large classical object. The metric looks smooth at the horizon. The curvature radius here is as much as the radius of the Earth. There's no strong curvature or anything over there. So something must be happening with the idea of what is classical and what is not classical. Let's dig into how this happened and how come we have to change our picture of the whole macroscopic object in a way that we did not expect. So in the traditional picture of the matter which you have, suppose you have some big ball of gas, it shrinks under its gravity, as we saw, it just falls in, it makes a black hole, and you get this horizon, it all goes to the center. So we saw that. But instead, now that we have found these other states, which we call these fuzzball states, they're not spherically symmetric, but they don't have a horizon, they don't have a singularity, they're just some solutions. Suppose as this guy shrinks, suppose it tunnels into one of these guys. Now, of course, that is very silly. A big macroscopic object, bigger than even you, okay, tunneling into another macroscopic object of the same mass, the action must for this tunneling must be, the amplitude must be extremely small. So you know how you compute the amplitude for tunneling? It's e to the minus the action for the process. Okay, if you know about tunneling in quantum mechanics, you'd have learned that. You can compute the action from the gravitational action that we know, and you get some number. And indeed, this amplitude is very, very small. Okay, so why do I even talk about one guy tunneling to another? In principle, you could tunnel across this wall, go to the other room, but you never think about it. But suppose on the other side of this room, there were a large number of states that you could tunnel to. Well, then you have to worry about the fact that you have a small amplitude tunnel to any one of those states, but if there are a lot of states over there, you have to multiply by the number of states. And the one thing we have learned about black holes is we know exactly how many states it has. It's e to the power, the Bekesner entropy, and the Bekesner entropy is, we put in the numbers before, it looks like this. And you find something remarkable. This number has the potential of canceling this number. So the very small amplitude of tunneling can be offset by the large number of states that you can tunnel to. So here's a toy model in quantum mechanics which you can do at home. Suppose you have a box with a wave function of a particle sitting in it, and a small amplitude tunnel to a neighboring box, but a very small amplitude. But I give you a large number of neighboring boxes. The black hole is such a large phase space, there are a lot of states I can go to. I know that entropy. Remember, 10 to the power 10 to the power 77 states for a solar mass black hole, much bigger than a ball of gas like the sun. If you do this, the amplitude to go to any one state is very small, but because the number of these states is so big, in a time of order unity, you'll become a linear combination of all these guys. And so that's what may be happening with the black hole. The classical quantum split has gone. The entropy we had for the black hole and the classical action to go from the black hole to any other state of these first ball states is canceled by the number of states you can tunnel to, and the two things don't separate. Let me try to summarize what all we have learned. First, we learned about the Hawking theorem. And the Hawking theorem argument Hawking made, everybody thought there must be some mistake in what Hawking is doing. He was never very precise. The paper had a lot of words in it. And people thought maybe if you do the calculation more carefully, the information would come out. But in fact, you can actually make it a theorem. And earlier this year, I sort of sat down using some information theory inequalities and made his argument rigorous. I'll call this a Hawking theorem. If you have low energy motes at the horizon, they evolve within Hamiltonian, which looks like it's a vacuum space. If the space near the horizon looks like a vacuum up to terms of order epsilon, at most a fraction epsilon of the information will come out in the radiation. So Hawking wasn't wrong. If you really make a horizon, you will lose quantum mechanics. That's rigorous. So you don't want to make the horizon. How did all this happen? We have said we don't make a horizon. You get all kind of mess filling the whole horizon-sized ball. Things don't actually go in. How did this happen? Well, what did we throw into the black hole? The oranges which made the black hole, they should have been in there. When all these pairs were produced, this guy went out and this guy went in. All those guys should have been in there. All the stuff was inside the black hole. How did the black hole vanish? When all this was left, if all this was still there, right, then you would be, these guys would be entangled with these guys. There's no problem. You're entangled with somebody, he's sitting somewhere else, but that's okay. It's because these guys went away, there was a problem. But how can somebody go away? But that's the beauty of where we started. Gravity is an attractive force. These guys had negative energy because of the attraction. The negative energy cancels the positive energy. The mass of this can actually be zero, even though there are a huge number of things in it. The positive mass of the stuff in there and the other particles in there, if their gravitational attraction is strong enough, because they are closer than horizon distance, the negative energy of the gravitational attraction outweighs the positive energy, and the black hole just vanishes. That is how the Hawking problem happened. So we are back where we started. With an attractive force, everything would go in. Well, what's the solution? What we know from string theory for sure is, for all the cases we have made so far, you never actually end up making a horizon. The whole structure doesn't happen. And why doesn't it happen? Because the quantum effects are so big that they completely obviate what you were thinking of classically or semi-classically. Okay? And for some specific examples, we now have the Hawking radiation and everything done. So based on what we have seen from string theory, we actually made the states of these black holes. Basically, all that one finds is energy eigenstates in string theory. You take any number of particles in your full theory of quantum gravity string theory, you put them together, you try to make a black hole, it never makes a horizon. So if that's what you wanted to call a black hole, getting a horizon, the bound state always has a size because of its high degeneracy. It always has a phase space it wants to occupy, and that phase space makes it never actually fall inside a horizon. Okay? But based on this, we can sort of conjecture what happens to the whole process of gravitational collapse. Okay, that's a dynamical process. We can just conjecture on that because we just make energy eigenstates. But once you know eigenstates, you can decide what happens to everything else. You know, in a traditional path integral formulation of quantum mechanics, there's a measure and there's an action. The action is normally classical, and the measure has is small and counts the degeneracy of states, just ordinary quantum mechanics. If you have traditional macroscopic objects, this one is big and this one is small. But for the black holes, the entropy was so big that this measure actually became comparable to this. And so the classical quantum split broke down. So the entropy had a factor of 1 over h bar in it. If you go back to the original formula, this guy always has a 1 over h bar in it. If this guy becomes comparable to this, classical quantum split doesn't work. And now this is happening on a macroscopic scale. You make a bigger black hole, you have even more mass. You might think the amplitude for tunneling is very small, and indeed it is. But the number of states is correspondingly absolutely huge. You again don't get a classical quantum split. Doesn't matter how big you make the black hole, you can never get to a domain which is classical. And so the conjecture you would make is, you start with this black hole, and then the guy shrinks, and then, you know, it slowly tunnels into all these other things. And, you know, you can estimate the time for this tunneling. It will be shorter than the time of Hawking evaporation. This object is what you call a black hole. Motion of heavy objects in there may not be changed much. If there's some kind of mess in there, a heavy object may just crash through, just like you might have expected otherwise. But what we're interested in, these Hawking radiation particles, modes being pulled out of the vacuum, they don't come out of the vacuum. They come out of this quantum fuzz, and all the cases that we have actually worked out, they carry the information out. Okay. So in this way, the whole this fuzzball program, as we call it, it solves the information paradox. Well, we solve the paradox. Has it done us any good? At least the whole theory does is not inconsistent. You can have generativity. You can have quantum mechanics. What lessons should we extract, and where should we take it? Okay. So I'll just put my last slide up here. This is my last slide, so I'll end now. We should take all these lessons and apply them to cosmology. Because in a black hole, everything was getting crushed by gravity to a point, and it didn't manage to get in there because of all this large phase space, made the whole thing just puff out again. Where else do we see a lot of particles crushed into a point? If you go back in the early universe, things got denser and denser till things got crushed into a point. So you could ask the question, what kind of state of matter do you get in string theory when you crush it to infinite densities? And it seems from all that we know about black holes that we can actually make a conjecture for this equation of state. And one finds there's an enormous phase space for this equation of state at these very early times, which is nowhere near the space of normal thermal gravitons or even strings floating around that we have ever explored. So I think the moral that one has to worry about is that when you go to really high densities, what is the actual phase space of gravity solutions? It's much bigger than we ever thought it was. It's so big that it breaks the classical quantum split. Effects can go across macroscopic distances like we just saw. And so in fact, all the locality or the ideas of local particles buzzing around in space-time that we might mentally be thinking about in tackling the very, very early universe, they may all be wrong. So because we have very exact numbers from black holes to understand the nature of the entropy, nature of radiation, we can even construct the states. We should go back now and look at the early universe and try to ask what is really going on near time t equal to 0. Stop here. Okay.